Oh, yeah, that's Trombone Shorty with The Sixth, talking about the Sixth Ward of New Orleans, where there's a lot of music clubs. It's kind of the residential part of the French Quarter. It's got a lot of history, a lot of soul, and a lot of music. Trombone Shorty from his album Back of Town. Bruce Springsteen from his new album Letter to You. We heard Rainmaker, and it was Canada's own Beau Soleil with Take It to Me. It's Undercurrents. I'm Greg, back with Leela Downs in just a minute. Hey, everybody. As we get closer to the end of the month, we want to just remind you that this is our last month of Undercurrents. You may hear some reruns here and there, but from now on, the only way to hear us will be streaming at Undercurrents Radio.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Imperfect real-life moments can provide the best and sometimes the only opportunity for spiritual growth in your day. Yet we rarely see our imperfections as an opportunity for spiritual growth. Instead, we see them as something to hide, something to fix, change, or deny. Then we tend to beat ourselves up over our flaws and mistakes. We feel guilty, inadequate, unworthy. But our guest today shows how the very imperfections you may be trying to hide are the ones that can put you on a path of spiritual growth and greater well-being. Our guest today on Pathways is Polly Campbell, author of the new book, Imperfect Spirituality, Extraordinary Enlightenment for Ordinary People. Polly is a writer and speaker specializing in personal development and spirituality topics. Her work appears regularly in national publications, and she is a blogger with Psychology Today and a teacher for the Daily Om. For more than two decades, Polly has studied and applied the techniques she writes and speaks about to her own life. She and her family live in Beaverton, Oregon. Hello, Polly, and welcome to the Pathways program.
Hi, Paul. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, as you were telling me before the show, your book is the result of some life experiences you came into in the last 5 years. Would you share that with us?
I was at a real state of transition in my life. I had a nine-month-old baby, which anyone who has children or even a new roommate or anything changes your relationship in your house. And it changed my relationship with my husband and with my body. That was just a time of flux. And I also had cut back the number of hours I was working. And so that was shifting for me. And I was diagnosed with cancer, melanoma. And so it seemed like I just moved out of this place of flow into a lot of frustration and fear and dissatisfaction. And what I realized is the things that I normally would do to move through my stress and anxiety, my meditations and my contemplation practice and my visualizations, I wasn't doing those things either. By the end of the day, I wanted to be having a glass of wine and resting after a day with the baby rather than doing my practice. And so I really became disconnected between my head and my heart and felt ungrounded. And I had to find my way back to my spirit and the things that made me feel better and made me feel whole. So I started practicing while I was doing the dishes. I started practicing while I was driving in the car to the doctor's appointments or whatever it was I was doing. I began using spiritual practice in those transitions of my day rather than putting it on hold until the end of the day when I could meditate or whatever it was. So I adapted those practices to be more practical in the moments of my life. And then I wrote this book out of that.
And what had been blocking you from doing that before you caught on?
I think it was a lack of awareness. I think I was really focused on the things that were going wrong instead of the things that were working well in my life. I think I got stuck in that. I was creating real drama in my life. I was telling myself a lot of stories instead of really seeing the reality of what was going on in those moments, which wasn't all that bad, you know?
And of course, the way that we perceive reality is filtered by our beliefs or attitudes, and you were focusing on what was going wrong. How is that an example of perfectionism?
Well, you know, I was looking at the ways that I wasn't measuring up as a mother, or my body wasn't healthy, or I wasn't doing the right kind of work. So I was constantly comparing myself to some cultural ideal or ideal of other mothers or other women. And whenever you're doing that, you're looking at the external outcomes or external rewards or failures. And that is never a fair measure of your true essence. So you put in a lot of energy trying to hide or measure up or equal some arbitrary external measure instead of putting your energy into your talents and your skills and the abilities that you do have and your ability to love and connect with others compassionately. So when I was, for example, worried about not being a good enough mother, I had to sit back and look at what I considered good enough, which was some ideals set up by other people, which didn't involve me and weren't about me. And I really settled in and looked at what I was doing, which was I was loving my daughter and I was connected with her and I was parenting that to the best of my ability. And if it looked a little different than, say, the magazine families or the sitcom families, then so be it. This was my way. And I really found a gift in the messiness that was my life. I learned how to give myself a break, be a little more compassionate with myself, and actually put that energy into doing what I do rather than worrying about what I wasn't doing.
How do you measure what's good enough? Or do you just simply stop measuring such things?
Yeah, good question. I think you stop measuring. I don't think there is a good enough in the sense that some, you know, external measure or point system. But I think what you can do is arrive at an awareness in your own life where you know that whatever comes in, you're just fine. Whatever comes in, you as you are now are good enough. You don't have to be different to be spiritual. You don't have to follow some rules. There isn't any set of guidelines. You simply need to experience your life with a greater awareness. And I think that makes you capable and able to really enjoy and survive and cope with whatever comes in.
Now, you have some information in the book that I really enjoyed about how we ever got the idea that we should be perfect.
Yeah. Historically, it goes back centuries. And I talked to experts about this who have studied history and our cultural history. And it really came, you know, with the pilgrims and those early Puritans and the settlers and the Calvinist philosophy that in order to be worthy in the eyes of God, which was the big picture for them, in order to be worthy in the eyes of God, you had to be successful. You had to be doing work that was the right kind of work or meaningful work or lucrative work. You had to be having a certain, they had rules. They had things that you had to live up to be worthy in the eyes of God. And it transformed our culture. You know, some good things came out of that too. But what it did is it set a standard that nobody could ever measure up to. And so we began comparing ourselves to each other and began comparing ourselves to what our image of the divine is instead of knowing that we are all divine, that we contain the same elements of the universe as the stars and the galaxies and the planets, that is within us and we are within that. We are not separate from that. And when you pull this idea of non-duality together or wholeness together, it's a relief. And so not only are we more connected spiritually, but we can relax a little because we're less stressed out. In a real practical level, we do better because we feel better. And that can change the world, I think.
Now, at the risk of getting into politically incorrect territory here, would you take issue with religions that promote an achievement ethic, an achievement of perfection as the goal type of ethic, where you're always a sinner, but your goal is to become perfect, as opposed to other religions that focus on practice, like daily practice of generosity or compassion, or just plain letting go?
Yeah. I don't really take issue with any of it. Because I believe that's a personal decision for everybody.
That's very diplomatic.
But yes, I'm diplomatic. But, you know, because I know religion has really helped a lot of people too and been a good support and good community for those people. However, if you are doing anything in your life, if you are affiliated with any religion or any organization, which is making you feel inadequate or making you feel like you can never be enough, then I think it's wise to look at that choice and your affiliation with that to decide if this is being helpful and allowing you to step into your potential, or if you're feeling inadequate and insecure because you can't meet this mark of perfection. I don't think you have to live that way, and I don't think we need to feel that way in our lives, because within the imperfection there's great meaning.
Now, how would you define what you expect readers to get out of your book?
Oh, I just want them to feel better. You know, I want, this is a practical book with lots of practices that you can use in the moment. And I want people to feel better, because when they are feeling good, then they move toward their passion and purpose. And when you are doing that, you bring me right along with you. There's momentum. There's collective momentum when we are doing what we are meant to do on this planet. We get excited about it. We love better. We are kinder to each other. We are more compassionate. And that energy will uplift the rest of us. So I don't think we have to be in this constant place of stress where we feel like we're not doing good enough or we're screwing it up all the time. You know, you're going to make mistakes. Okay. That's okay. And you can be compassionate in that and accountable to that. And then you can move through that upset with more grace and ease than being stuck in the drama that we're creating. And then you feel better and you're physically healthier, because we know stress contributes to all sorts of chronic health problems now, and heart disease. And so I hope they take what's helpful in the book for them and move with it.
Why do you figure self-acceptance is so darn hard?
I practice this a lot because it's hard for me too. It's because we are in the habit of judging. And when you judge, you are not accepting. You are resisting. And we are in a culture where we like to blame other people for the things that are going haywire. We find ways to judge and diminish and criticize each other. And maybe in part because when we're doing that, when we're looking out of ourselves like that, it keeps us from going inside and looking at our and taking responsibility for ourselves and looking at the areas of growth we need to experience.
Do you think it's fair to say that when we are judging others, that we're basically projecting outward judgments we may have about ourselves?
I do. I'd be curious to know what you think too, but I do, because I think when we can identify those qualities in other people that we don't like, it's because we've seen them first or felt them first from within.
Now, one of the things we commonly judge about ourselves is the importance or non-importance of what we are doing. And in that context, I found it very entertaining, the example that you have in your book about how pulling a raisin out of a two-year-old's nose can be a path to enlightenment.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
It was first a path to upset. My kid got a raisin jammed up her nose, and it resulted in this argument because I didn't realize the raisin was in her nose. And my husband was driving, and we were all in the car on the way to this trip, and it turned into be this big drama. And all of a sudden, she's complaining about her nose hurting. And so I'm like, your nose doesn't hurt. Just be quiet. We're going on this trip. And I was being the mom. And all of a sudden, she sneezed, and the raisin shoots out of her nose and smashes into the windshield in front of me. And in that moment, it was such a disruption that it took me out of the pattern where I was ruminating on what wasn't going right again and what we're doing wrong and everything's supposed to be neat and tidy into, well, but this is my life experience. And if I keep looking for all the beautiful things and the good manners and the polish and all of that, then I'm also going to miss these moments that allow me to connect with my daughter or to laugh or learn about myself. And it really moved me out of the pattern of rumination that I was in about being frustrated with my family and into this place of, oh, but this is part of it too. And this is part of living a spiritual life as well. This mess, you know?
So even the things that are messy and imperfect, like a booger projectile, have a silver lining.
I really think so. I think sometimes, as you know, we don't always know what the lining is, and we may never know, or it may arrive a year later or two later. But I think that's where my faith comes in. And my faith, the way I think about that, is just the trust that I'm where I need to be at this moment. I'm doing what I need to do.
I mean, this idea that everything happens for a good reason, that there are no accidents, and but you may not know the reason for a while, if ever, and yet we're called upon to to be warriors of acceptance, if you will. You have a word for this. You call this being an optimalist?
Yeah, optimalist.
Optimalist.
Yeah. You know, and that, rather than being a perfectionist where there's only one way that things can go for it to go right, because I think when we get trapped in this view of perfectionism, then we stop doing things, because if we can't do it right, why do it at all? An optimalist is a person who just knows that things are going to go haywire, or they might get outcomes that they didn't expect, or things might show up that they weren't prepared for, and they're good with that because they know that the experience and the process is more valuable and will yield greater gifts than being stuck in only this one right way of thinking, this so-called perfectionism. And so an optimalist, really, when you're in that state, you're really able to take risks and try new things and have a sense of humor and say, oh yeah, that did not work, but at least I gave it a try. Now what else can I figure out? And we become creative and we become expansive, which I think puts us right in alignment with our spiritual side.
What do you think causes people to be so demanding of explanations for everything that happens? Like, it's almost like we're demanding that the universe explain it to us. Why did this happen to me? What's behind that?
You know, all I can think of is a source of fear. And again, it goes back to the perfectionism. We believe if we can find the right answer, then we can get it right.
Right.
And I don't think that's it. I may have said earlier, I think, you know, life is to be experienced. And that experience, you can have a great experience without having answers. You don't have to know why something happens or why it's not happening. You don't have to get in this habit of what-ifing your life away. What if I hadn't been diagnosed? What if I hadn't taken the right door? What if? Instead, you can be with whatever presents itself and winnow away that story that gets us caught in the drama and go into your life and be part of that.
I mean, this what-if habit is a kind of a form of self-blaming.
I think so, yeah, and resistance,
right.
Because we wish things away. I wish this hadn't happened, or what if I just moved that way? And we don't, it keeps us out of ourselves, so we're not dealing with what is.
Right. Now, in the book, you offer useful and easy spiritual practices that will help you shed the life-limiting beliefs that keep you stuck. This is a quote.
What are these
life-limiting beliefs that keep us stuck?
Well, I think anything that makes you feel not good or not whole is a limiting belief. And so that's different for other people. For, you know, we're as each individual, we have our own. For instance, you can look at your body and say, I see my body, I weigh 200 pounds, and that's you know, where you're at right then. Or you can look at that same body and say, I'm a fat pig and I'm so unattractive because I weigh 200 pounds. And so we tend to gravitate to the negative. We tend to pick those beliefs that or they're etched into us and we live with them subconsciously or unconsciously without realizing that we're not good enough. And a belief is an idea that we just repeat over and over. And so why not pick one that is more helpful? Why not look at yourself and say, I weigh 200 pounds. Nothing more of that. It's not a bad or good thing. It's where I'm at. Or why not look at yourself and say, hey, look at my nose, instead of, oh, my nose is too big and I need to have plastic surgery. Whatever. Pick the belief that is more helpful. And you'll know it because you'll feel it in your body.
It could be a belief about the exact same thing from a different point of view.
Exactly. It can be the same thing. We get to choose. Why not identify the ones that are sabotaging your success and pick ones that are going to support your success?
How important do you think it is for a person to accept their limitations? You know, we can call it self-limiting, but we have limitations. We can't fly without wings.
Yeah.
Some of us can't carry a tune. You know, things like that.
Well, I think it's important to accept everything, because when we don't, we're in this state where we're not seeing really what we have to deal with. We're not seeing the reality for us, and so we don't make good decisions. We don't get through the muck. So when you can look at all that you are and not even judge it as a limitation, just say, oh, I'm a person who can't fly, then you put your energy into what you can do right? Mm-hmm. If you look in your bank account and see, oh, I'm poor, I only have $500 in my bank account, or you look at your bank account and see the reality is, I have $500 and that will pay my bills, it's a different thing. So I don't know that the $500 becomes limiting. When you view at it from the level of acceptance, then you see what needs to be done and you're fired up to get after it then, rather than being stuck in the limitation.
And this is what happens when we stop denying or hiding or fixing things that we think are wrong. We have more energy.
Yeah, because we're more focused on, you know, it takes a lot of energy to feel bad. It hurts our body, it hurts our brain, it hurts our spirit. It takes a lot of energy to be focused on hiding and denying and fixing and blaming others for what's going haywire. Or we can just get to it. We can just say, oh, yeah, this is my experience right now. And that experience doesn't feel good. So I'm going to see what I can do to change that.
Yeah. So if you're always focused on what's wrong or what could go wrong,
you'll get more.
Yeah. That's what you're going to get. Yeah. You know, the game of golf is a great illustration of this, because if you're focused on the hazard, the pond next, and that's what you're focused on. In spite of the fact that you're saying, geez, I sure hope I don't hit it in the pond.
Story of my life. Right.
Right. But if you focus on the target, on what you want, then you do a lot better.
Right. I think life is like that in every way. Energy expands. You will get what you put your energy on. Now, if you're focused on you know, increasing your bank account or releasing the weight or whatever it is you want to focus on, that's a different experience in living and how you will behave out of that than it is to say, oh, I've been trying to lose weight forever and I'll never get the weight off and I'm stuck in that. Then you will constantly see how overweight you are. If you're focused on doing healthy and nourishing things for your body, you will create a healthy and nourished body that may include being at a lighter weight.
Now, you have a technique in the book for turning some of those things that we generally consider to be imperfect about life, things like having to do chores or relatively unpleasant tasks. What do you do?
Well, there are several things you can do, but one of them is I try to find the gift within. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, and you also have some way of turning chores into a meditation.
Well, yeah, you can do, when I load the dishwasher, that's one way. You get quiet on your body and you really ground your physical body into the space that you're in. So that means you feel your feet on the floor or you feel the air around you and you really become mindful of how your body's operating. And then you get quiet and you become very mindful of the activity. So instead of worrying about the dishwasher and, oh, my husband never unloads a dishwasher and this is the third time this week I've done it, you become really grounded in your body of the sound the dishes make when you pick them up and the cool that they feel like in the palm of your hand and the sound when you put them into the cupboard and the smell of that steamy water from the dishwasher. And all of a sudden, in 2 minutes, you've removed yourself from the upset. You've gotten curious and engaged in your life, and it's a real stress reliever. Plus, it takes you out of the negativity.
I love the way that your book helps people take something that they might normally resist and actually turn it into something that you can leverage. Like, for instance, finding the meaning in mistakes.
Yeah. I think if we look back on our lives, which takes us out of the present moment, but if we do that, we see that some of the greatest gifts and greatest opportunities have evolved out of those difficult moments. And I think the key is to remember when you're in those difficult moments that the gift is there. You may not see it now, and it may be a while, but it's there, and you trust in that. And so what it does is it changes that moment. Then you start looking for the gift, even while you're in it, and you start being grateful for opportunities that maybe even are painful, because you know it's going to yield something for you, and you know it will carry you to the next place in your awakening or your life experience, whatever, however it is you view it. For example, I got this cancer diagnosis, and I had one night that was very, very scary. I had an anxiety attack, and I'm a writer, and I woke up in the middle of the night with this anxiety attack, convinced I was dying right then and there, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, so this is what I've interviewed people about. This is the experience. Oh, okay. And I got real curious about it. And the gift allowed me to be more compassionate. And as a writer, I can understand more about what people have experienced and what they've shared with me. And so it transformed the moment. No longer was I stuck in the upset, but I found an immediate blessing and then moved on from there. And in later years, I've understood a lot more about that experience, which has been helpful. But whether you can figure it out at the moment, I don't even know if you need to. Just be in the upset and know that there is something there for you and that it will emerge.
And that's a certain kind of faith, really.
I think it's faith in knowing that you are just where you need to be and that you are enough in that moment. Mm-hmm. I absolutely think it's faith, but I think faith is cultivated. I don't think it comes from a lightning strike to the head or anything like that.
Right, right. Yeah, so faith is an intentional thing that we can cultivate. Yeah.
And
then there's another chapter title is feeling good about bad emotions.
Yeah. We like to behave out of our emotions. You know, somebody cuts us off on the freeway and we like to flip out and get angry or flip them off or whatever it is we need to do to make ourselves better. What I really think is emotions are there as cues for ourselves, that they trigger an opportunity for insight and information and self-understanding. They provide contrast. Without a negative emotion, you would never fully know what joy felt like or love. So instead of behaving badly out of the emotions, I think you can sit with them for a few minutes. Feel what that emotion of sadness or anger or whatever feels like in your body. And really experience that and then ask the question, huh, why are you showing up right now? What experience did I have that prompted this emotion? What can I learn from this? And get curious about that. And you transform that negative emotion into something more interesting and something more positive. What we often do when we experience upset after work or we've had a hard day or the kids are on our nerves or whatever it is we distance ourselves from those negative emotions and we drink or we surf the web or we shop or we whatever.
We medicate.
To do something to not feel that emotion. So you're never going to the source of the emotion. You're never learning anything from that. You're just blanking it out. What if we stop and sit with it for a minute and learn where it's coming from? Then we have a real awareness that we can work with and transform that negative source of that into something bigger and better.
I think it's beautiful the way this book gives so many practical tips about how to shift from the negative to the positive, how to shift from anger to gratitude. Very practical wisdom here. And thank you very much for writing it and for being here. And we're just about running out of time, but I want to be sure to talk about your website. Can you please tell us about your website, starting with the address?
Yeah, go to Imperfect Spirituality, those two words, imperfectspirituality.com. It's a blog. There's lots of free information, tidbits that, like we've been talking about today. It links to the book. Some classes that are offered online, also e-classes you can take and so forth. But really, I want it to be an uplifting place. If you need a pick-me-up, go there, check out one of the posts. I think you'll feel better in the moment.
And is there any last words that you'd like to offer our audience on the subject of imperfect spirituality?
I want people to know that they already are enough. They are spiritual beings. It's already within them. And this is about just getting in touch with that part again and living from that place so you feel better and experience more joy and peace in your life.
Well, I want to thank you once again for being on the show, Polly. It's been a great pleasure having you, but we have run out of time.
Okay.
So all the best. I hope the book does really well.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
And for those who tuned in late for Pathways, this is Paul O'Brien, and you can replay this entire interview anytime you want via the internet at divination.com or kboo.fm. Today we have been visiting with Polly Campbell, author of Imperfect Spirituality, Extraordinary Enlightenment for Ordinary People. To our listeners, I want to say thank you for tuning in to Pathways. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's divination.com. This is your host, Paul O'Brien, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways and its podcasts, the interview program dedicated to personal and cultural transformation. Thanks again for tuning in and being a part of it.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO's fall membership drive is just around the corner. Help us kick off our KBOO Out Loud drive on August